Okay, the parsha I'm going to try to do again to both approach and touch upon the parsha Tzav, this parsha, as well as the ideas behind Purim, a little times Esther, but mostly Purim, if we can make hopefully a connection and a theme between the two of them, we'll try to do that as well. I'm going to start with two questions, one on parsha and one on Purim. I'll start with the Purim one. We know it's a famous comparison, you guys have quoted it beforehand, that the Ari Zal HaKadosh points out that Yom Kippur and Purim, not only do they share a lot of letters, but we say Yom Kippur is a Yom Kippurim. It's a day like Purim. Now most people suggest what that means is Yom Kippur is such a holy day, imagine then how you have to look at Purim. But if you look at the actual details of each holiday, you could not be further off between 2 days than each other. It is so opposite of each other, you couldn't even imagine. On Yom Kippur, we wear our finest and our whites and our clothing, and in Purim, we paint our faces and we dress up like animals, literally and figuratively. Those of you who dress like athletes, that is. And people who, whether it be that the way we were festive in the day, we're drinking and we're very, you know, we have a lot of levity in our day, and Purim feels, Yom Kippur, it's more morose and somber and very serious. Yet, the Arizal has no problem comparing Yom Kippurim, says Kippurim and Purim. If you limit it to the Kedusha involved in each day, then you can make such a comparison. Once you get to the details, is there any way we can make a comparison to them beyond the, just the words and the letters of the actual word? Question number one. Question number two is in this week's parsha. We start off with the parsha, it's called Tzav, and actually at the beginning of the Chumash, it says the word Tzav, it's brought down also. Rashi states that Lashon of Tzav, both here and everywhere, means Zeruz Miyad V'Ladoros. What does the word Zeruz mean? And to make you alacrity, Zel, quick. To make you be working very quickly. And over here, Rashi explains why is there an importance on alacrity. Ein Tzav Lashon Zeruz Miyad V'Ladoros. So it says, Rashi records the Medrash that says, B'Yoser Tzarech HaKasuv L'Zareiz B'Makom Shish Bo Chisaron Kis. When there's a financial loss, when there's financial loss, certainly more than ever, we need to tell you, come on. You're not making any money off the deal, but you got to push yourself to do it. You got to try to do it. We need greater chizuk and greater encouragement in this financial loss. Over here, we're talking about this part of the parsha, about the Korban Ola. We know what's the deal with the Ola. How does the Ola work? The entire Ola is consumed. So we'd assume, what's the loss? So Jeff and I learned the Emes Yaakov loss is the Kohanim. Usually the Kohanim, they have a right to have some of the korbanos. And over here, they have most of it's been consumed. They miss out on part of the korban. So there's a loss of the korban. We have to have zeros. We have to push them anyways, even more. They should, with alacrity, they should do their avoda. I saw, I don't know what sefer was in. I think it was in the sefer of Mishnah Rabbi Aaron Cutler, I think, who pointed out, we're not talking about Joe Shavuos, we're talking about over here the kohanim. We have to give the kohanim chizuk. Moshe Rabbeinu, Aaron HaKohen, Aaron and his sons. We have to give them a chizuk. They know they're missing out on kiss. They have a chisar and kiss element over here. And therefore, they need to have extra love pushing them further to make sure that they're going to do the mitzvah and do it with alacrity and excitement. Now, you'd imagine, they should be beyond that already. You picture our gedolim. Because they can't eat a little bit of flesh, a little flesh, then they're not going to lose as much excitement anymore. Hard to imagine. Over here, you see it. There's a concept. I'm sorry, it was written, to say it was in the Sefer of the Lev Eliyahu. Rabbi Lugan made his point, that even the greatest people we have in the world, if there's something, a loss, a financial loss like this, we're going to have to find a way to give them chizuk. Every person's affected, even the gedolim are affected by having any sort of a loss. The question is, why? Why is starting to kiss up a big deal? Again, if someone's very money hungry, in a Western culture society, maybe a little more, where people have beautiful homes and nice cars, I understand why missing out on some cash would be a big deal for them. But look around at Israel here. Where people who are big tzaddikim, they have very small homes. They don't even have a car sometimes. So they can't have a little bit of meat like that. They're going to have a problem with their zeros, with their zrizis. It's very hard to imagine that. And not only that, but compound with the fact that according to the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, he says that over here we're discussing the tzav, the zeros, is for the Korban Tamid. Korban Tamid was all of us. We all participated in the Korban Tamid. We gave minimal amount of money. We gave, I don't know, a dollar. However much money we gave, a box of shekel a few times. Maybe we gave $5. Am I going to Am I going to lose sleep over the fact that I get to give $5 to the purpose of giving a korban tamid? I need zeros on that. I have to have zeros. I need to have someone give me inspiration. Don't forget, come on, put yourself, always put yourself to do the korban tamid. What's up shot with that? Why is those few cents, those few dollars, going to push me away from having zeros on my own? So this question over here is according to Sefer Balzav Mishpah. Moshe Shmuel Shapiro was actually one of the Reichman's, one of the 20 yeshivas he went to. That's all, he's not alive anymore, but he was one of the Rosh Yeshivas that Rosh Reichman went to, called Be'er Yaakov. So on this question, he tells the following story. Story about the Chafetz Chaim, a story I've heard before. I never saw it in print, but I heard before him. The story goes that he heard this in the Panevish Rav. And when he was learning in Kolel, in Radin, which where the Chafetz Chaim lived, he was learning with Rav Chana Wasserman, his Chavrusa, the powerhouse Chavrusa over there. So they wanted to look up a source. And they saw the source, annotated, saw it footnoted in the Sefer of Mishnah Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim, in the part called the Shaar HaTzion. Just so you know, the Shaar HaTzion was written also in the Chafetz Chaim. So he wrote the Be'er Halacha, which is more very elaborate, Mishnah Berurah, which is more Pesach, you know, not so much giving bit back and forth, more Pesach Halacha. And the Shaar HaTzion, anyone ever know what the Shaar HaTzion does? It's very short. Each one's like one word, two words. It just tells you the footnote. It tells you where to find it. Almost always. Sometimes it expands. Most of the time, it says to you, Magen Avraham, Prima Godness, quotes you the source. It all tells you where the source is from. They saw a Sefer quoted in the Shaar HaTzion, and they couldn't find the Beis Medrash. They figured, oh, we're fortunate with the same community as Chafetz Chaim does. Let's go to his home and borrow the Sefer from him. So they go to Chafetz Chaim's house. Chafetz Chaim greets them with Sefer Panim Yafos, he's smiling, what can I do for you? So we saw a Sefer quoted in the Shaar HaTzion, can I look it up? Do you have it on your shelf? Chafetz Chaim says, I don't have the Sefer. Looks back at his shelf, and he starts to have this real big frown on his face. He gets very sad, very upset. He says, Rebbe, why are you so upset? What's wrong? Is it because you don't have a Sefer? Like, well, you know, we don't mean to come here and give you a problem and have you sad. We don't want to make you sad. Is that why I'm sad? It's because I'm looking at my shelves and I'm wondering, like, did I have to buy that book? That one on the top left there, that's building dust. I need that book. Why'd I buy that? Why'd I need that book? It was a waste of my money. So again, what do you mean, waste of your money? What does that mean? Like, what's the big deal? So you spent $8 on a book and you didn't read it all. Why are you sitting here lamenting the fact that you bought a book? Who cares? So the answer is that money is time. We usually say the opposite. We say, time is money. Waste your time, you're losing out on money. Chafetz Chaim is the opposite. He said, money is time. What does that mean, money is time? I mean, if I got money, I had $8. What time am I at a store? I was a chaybani, Chafetz Chaim was a storekeeper. He must have sat sometime in the store to make $8. He went and he bought a book up with it, and he didn't use the book at all. And he felt that I make good use of my time now. Why buy the book? I don't care about wasting money, but I had time I put into that. Why did I waste my time in the world with that? I remember one time I went to get a bracha from a rav, named Rav Galai. Rav Galai is a big tzaddik. This star, he lives in, still Baruch Hashem, he's lived on in 20s, alive today. He lives in Bnei Brak. Of course, a lot of the great rabbanim that we all heard of. He's a little bit not so well known. So I went to his house, and I was waiting for him. My father-in-law was there, my brother-in-law was there, and I was there. And, you know, I was waiting, and my father was there for a long time. I was just waiting there to speak to Rav for a few minutes, personal questions I had, about advice and bracha. And I noticed, strange enough, that I was peering around like sometimes you guys do when you're on my phone. I was looking on his wall in his kitchen, and there was a clock there that was stuck. It wasn't moving at all. It said on like, I don't know, it was like 11:17. And it was right now, it was like 3 in the afternoon. So I'm sitting there, maybe it was like a few hours off, maybe it was some reason why I'm watching it. And it wasn't moving. It didn't move the whole time I was there for half an hour, it didn't move at all. So when I get into the meeting with the Rav, after I spoke to him about it, I said, can I ask him a quick question? He's like, sure. I said, is there a significance to the Rav's clock on his wall? He doesn't move from 11:17. Is there any significance to the clock being at that exact time the whole time? So he's like, no. What's the difference? So I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. This is to me the most significant line, which was, I just don't have time to change the time.
out of time to worry about this time. If I'm with you right now, the most important thing to me is you. I can't keep myself to a schedule. I don't have time to worry about time.
You said all
things.
That or just the first
all those things. Oh. To me, if I'm with you right now, I can't go now and say, oh, I have to be out of here. You're important right now. I don't have time for anything else except for you right now in front of me. So he said at the end, he said, I don't have time to worry about time. So I don't know if you know that's there for that reason, but I was like so hit from that point. And we were so out of schedule and out of routine. And this, and I say to you, wake up in the morning, wake up in the morning. But it's 7, Rebbe. It's 7:15, it's 7:30, it's so hard for me. Those are just random numbers. You don't should have time to write time. Time is, it's just numbers. It doesn't mean anything at all. All the currency that you have in this world of time says, all I have is money. Time is not money. Money is time. How could you take money and you use it and waste it? It means that you wasted your time. Because you wasted your money. You wasted your time. That is the most important thing, he says. And therefore, looking back at our parsha right now that we have, how could you not have a certain chalisha zadas? You have to give your money over. It's only a dollar. So what? That's my time, though. My time is more important than anything. If I have to give my time over, I have to give my money over, my time over, then for that you need Jesus. Give it over. I'm giving you chizik. You got to do the mitzvah. Bring the korban tzedakah, the Rosh Hashanah says. Even though it's a time element that you're losing out because you're losing out money on it. I have to give you chizik for it. You and I are so not holding this point over here where for us, time, we don't care about it. We're trying to pass time. I wish I could just pass time. I wish I could fast forward to. To fast forward time is the only currency you have. It's like saying, I wish I could just give someone money away for an hour terminology. I wish I could give someone $1,000. I wish I could give it to someone else. You should have been people would be happy to take $1,000. They'd be happy to. Time is not money, but money is time. And therefore, since the Orach Hanukkah, which is this point over here as well, this is what we hear with the Shapiro saying over here, the Zav Mishpah, is that the idea behind that losing out on money is that a tzaddik dafka is so upset losing money. Not because he's greedy, because he recognizes what money stands for. It stands for your effort and it stands for your time. And if you're not okay, if you're not saddened by losing it, by giving it up, then something's wrong with you. Then what are we doing here if we don't care at all about our time? Further, the Or Gedaliah of Gedaliah Shor points out as well. He says the pshat maybe really is that it's not talking about the korban tum, but rather the korban toda. He says the korban toda, which we have later on, is with parsha about a paragraph and a half later on. We find all about the korban toda. The korban toda is what we're giving our money about, and that's what we're supposed to have zrizas about. Zrizas about giving a korban toda. What's the korban toda first of all? What does it mean? So he says up here, he says, if you think there's two types, and by the way, he even goes on and quotes the Medrash story later. He quotes the Medrash and says that in the future, by the way, it's very ironic, very similar to Purim. We know in the future, all halas will be mevatel, all halas are not going to be very much of a Purim. All korbanos, it says, are going to be mevatel, lasi lavo, except for korban tamid. So again, Purim and the korban tamid have some sort of relation with each other. What is the connection? Why we say both these things, but particularly korban tamid right now, is not going to be mevatel, it's not going to be mevatel. Some guys sometimes lament to me when we learn Gemara, there's certain words that mean more than one thing. If I say the word modeh, what does the word modeh mean? Like, what's that? Admit and thanks, it means both of them. Admit, oh, that was like thanks, oh, that was admit. You said, like, oh, that was the other one. The truth is, they really mean the same thing. Admit and thanks mean the same thing. It means you're correct. That's what, you are correct. I admit you're correct. Thank you for what you did. I feel like you were correct in what you did. I thank you for it. I thank you for doing what you did. I think it was right what you did. It was correct. And therefore, he says that they both stem from the same concept of appreciating what someone else did. You appreciate it. I admit what you said is true. I admit you're right. I appreciate your point. Thank you for what you gave to me. I appreciate what you gave to me. There's a certain amount of appreciation and an acknowledgement of someone else being proper and someone else being correct. When you get to Shemayim, right, Lasu Lavo, whatever korbanos will be brought, the Achatas, the Ashim, the Shalom, whatever it may be, they're all about the Lasu Lavo. But this ability to say to someone, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu particularly, I appreciate you. I appreciate where you're coming from. That is something that we have to be very careful about and very, very concerned with. And that requires us to have zeros about it. To be given alacrity for it. To go to someone and to tell them a thank you. To go to someone and to say to them, I admit you're right. That's the hardest thing in the world to do, is say, you're right, I'm wrong. Or I'm sorry. To appreciate someone else's point that wasn't your own is the hardest thing to do. That's something we're not going to be mevatel, even lost at level at that point. Something we're always going to have to keep in mind no matter where we are. And with that said, I want to move over now, if I can, to Purim for the next few minutes. Because Purim also is not lost at level. Purim in the future also will never be gone. But I want to go back to the first question that we asked, which is what's the difference between Yom Kippur and Purim, besides the similar letters that you put both of them? The truth is they have a tremendous connection to each other. A tremendous. And when we're finished explaining the connection, you'll see that that Purim is much more important than Yom Kippur. Much more significant. And we'll see also, maybe I'll try to get with the Micah's question he asked a little while ago, which is the tiniest Esther element within the context of Purim. I'll try to take the same point as well. That is as follows. Yom Kippur, when it came at the first time, besides reading the Torah, there's an event that happened in Yom Kippur. For us in history, that was a very significant event, perhaps one of the most important events we ever had in our lives. And that was the second luchos we got. We walked down the mountain with the second luchos in our hand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to us, showing us, I forgive you 100%. Here's the luchos. We know those luchos were special, but we also know when we got the Torah the first time, when we got those luchos, there was a certain coercion involved in it, if you recall. The coercion was, Hashem put the mountain overhead, said, guys, you have a choice here. Here's a Torah I want to give you. But, by the way, there are strings attached. If you don't take that Torah, then the strings of this mountain will not be attached anymore, and it will fall on top of your head, and here will be where you will die. Or, take the Torah, what do you want? And the Jews said, we'll take the Torah. Okay, great. But that was out of fear. That was out of awe. That was lacking something to it. According to the Maharal, I'll tell you a beautiful shot the Maharal brings down, it didn't happen that way. There was no coercion, there was no literal mountain over their head. But what there was as follows. The moment God's brother comes to you, explicitly, in your face, and says, here I am! You have no choice anymore! You're going to say to God, no? He just told you he exists! We have all these questions. God exists, I don't know if he's true, does he care at all? Well, when the day he comes to you and tells you, I do exist, I do know what you do, and I care about all of it. Now what? You're not going to do it anymore? Of course you'll do it. You have no choice. It's Keilu, a mountain held over your head. That's serving Hashem, but serving Hashem, it's missing something to it. It's missing a piece, because you feel coerced to do so. But then it comes Purim. What happens Purim? So Gemara in Shabbos, Pechas, and Aleph states, it says, Kimu v'kiblu, in the Purim Megillah. It says, Kimu v'kiblu, what does that mean? It means kiblu, kimu masha kiblu kvar. They accepted that which they already took upon themselves earlier on. And it says in Chazal that in the days of Mordechai, in those time period, we embraced the Torah that we only took a long time ago out of force. What's the connection? Because now the storyline is different. Because Baruch Hu is not talking to us directly. I can't even see him. As a matter of fact, I even question whether he cares about this at all. Base Mikdash was destroyed. The time is up to be rebuilt, we think, as everyone else thought it was. They bring out the camel, I think he's God's left me. And if I still embrace the Torah right now, then that is Yom Kippur in a higher level. There's no coercion. God is not talking to me directly. I can't hear him so well. I have to fine-tune my antenna to pick up anything at all from God right now. And if I still embrace God, then it's much more significant what happens in Yom Kippur. Purim is multiple times greater now than Yom Kippur ever was. And why is that the case? Because I take things I don't see, where I have questions and I have challenges and I have doubts, and I make sure that I don't care about those things. I live a life today, and it's what we live in today, it's a Purim life. We have Hester Punim. I don't see that mountain over my head. I don't see the obvious nature of God anymore. This is your chance to be a better Jew than they were in Har Sinai even. Because when you say, even though I doubt, even though I can't see, I still embrace not only that, but I will still do every, not because I want to do, I do every last mitzvah in the book, then Purim is much greater than everything else that we have. The danger with that is that we can also turn our eyes from it and say, feh, it's not real, it's just a cop-out answer, there is no God, he doesn't care what I do, and listen, you can say them all now. And no one can prove you wrong anymore. You could never say that statement years and years and years ago when the Har Sinai happened that you couldn't say it anymore. But now you can. So either you can take that attitude and you can challenge, or you can be a Purim Jew. Where Rizal says that Purim, Yom Kippur is kid Purim, it's not as great as Purim is. Because you're a much higher level person then. Besides that, and this part is found in the Sifrei Chaim, he points out that another thing you have is when you have a moment like Har Sinai, those moments come and go. And when they go, you can't relate to it anymore. We don't relate to that point. We never saw it happen. But if you're a Purim Jew, it means that you appreciate regular things. You appreciate Teva. You see God in everything that you do. you see God in your time. At every last piece of the puzzle of what you do in your life, you find God. It makes your life meaningful, not just waiting for those moments of inspiration to happen, but every waking moment is inspiration. Because we're kibu v'kibu. We took it first out of yira. Now I have ava. I do have love. I'm not afraid. I don't even see. I can turn my blind eye. I have friends of mine who turn a blind eye all the time. They reject completely. I don't reject. My life is full of meaning. My life is full of importance. I feel significant what I do with myself. My time is not money. My money is my time. I'll tell you something, Abusha. Oh, Kabil Chavetz Chaim, what we had before, it's a President Barack Obama. Hope he listens to this speech on Banner now. I'm sure he won't. Barack Obama, the biggest thing over the news the last few days was Barack Obama fills out his pool, his bracket picks for the NCAA tournament coming up. He fills out his bracket picks. That's the biggest deal right now. He picked all number one seeds to advance. What a chiddush. Thank God he's a president of the United States. He takes rocket science to pick each number one seed that actually advances the final four. How does he have the time in his day to work on a bracket? Now, you and I, it's okay. We're not the biggest, we're not the time yet. But I'm preaching to you, if you live your life of importance, like the Chavetz Chaim, or like a mad person I say would be, how could you have the time to buy a book you don't learn? Chavetz Chaim laments, how can I book my child? I didn't learn. I'm wasting my time. I'm lamenting over that fact. Barack Obama publicizes, if it was me, if I was picking pulls out, I wouldn't tell anyone, I'd be embarrassed. I'll be embarrassed. My father emails me and tells me, where's the pool coming out? I told you, the family pool, we gotta get to. I'm embarrassed by that. It's embarrassing for me. I'll do it. But then I take time out of my schedule. I have nothing more important to do than fill out a bracket of these guys who I know. I have no clue who's even on what team anymore. Barack Obama is the time in his day to fill out a bracket. In his day, and for him, time is money. Money's not time. If money was time, then he would care much more about his time. We live in a life when, for us, we just try to pass the days. We try to get through a day. I want to get through the fast. You can get through the fast. You have an opportunity right now. Every single year, Purim is the same Kedusha possibilities. It is a time when you look around you and you see God in every last detail. Why do we drink? Because sometimes our bodies don't let us see it. Because our bodies are too stubborn. But if you loosen up a little bit sometimes, loosen yourself up a little bit, and if I focus on the little bit part, sometimes you're able to see things deeper than you thought beforehand. You're able to feel like you're not so restricted, not so inhibited with your physical bodies anymore. That means you're able to look beyond what is so natural and physical for you. And you drink not to get drunk. You drink to elate in the fact that today is a day when I don't have to find a hard sin to see God. It's a better day than that. Today when I'm able to daven for anything I want and have God listen to me. Today when it comes to Baruch Hu is called Posha Yad Nosmulo.
I'll end off with the following just gematria. Esther, the word Esther, is the same letter, same gematria value as the word Tocho Kiboro, plus one. Tocho Kiboro means when your insides and your outsides are the same. Tocho Kiboro means when you are the same inside and outside. Maybe Tainus Esther comes before Purim, because I want to show you that your Tocho and your Boro are the same. When you're drinking, Tocho means your inside, Boro means your outside. Whether you spend your day in fasting, whether you spend your day in complete celebration, it should be the same exact feeling you have both days. There's no difference. There's a different way we express ourselves, but the day should be the same to us. The day of me embracing God, of me saying that I am completely consistent whether I fast and also the next day when I drink. It's not so hard to fast and be a good Jew. It's very hard to drink and be a good Jew. So I'm saying Hester, Aster, Aster, the idea of hiddenness is what I'm saying right now. I'm breaking out of my hiddenness. When I fast and when I drink, I'm exactly the same. I express differently, but I'm the same motivation. I have the same kavana. I have the same Yirah Shemayim. I have the same Avas Hashem. Every last detail. Because I live a life where my tofu is kibor. I know that my money is my time. My time and money. Money is nothing. Time is money. I hear your mind doesn't stay with you forever. You lose it. That means your time is also nothing then. But if money is time, then it's valuable. Because my time is precious. My time is my goal. Then I can embrace every second I have. Which we zocheh this year to realize that we always picture Yom Kippur as the holiest day. And Purim is this crazy day when people do silly things. Not at all. Purim was the day when we were able to say, I don't need you to come out, Hashem, move off the roof and say to me, I'm here. I see you when I wake up in the morning, open my eyes, I see you then.
I see you when I don't eat any food at all. I see you then. And I see you when I down a few shots and have some wine. I see you then. And if you can see a Kadosh Baruch Hu and not wait for those moments to see him in everyday life, and to appreciate that money is time, and how much more so, how much more special our lives will be. We zocha to be dibei chizuk for each other, to be able to spend this Purim in a day of Kedusha, in a way of inspiration, nothing that we could ever regret, but things we'll look back upon fondly as one of the finer points of our year, one that hopefully catapults us to great new heights.